Hey there, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Leif Arneson, and I'm the founder of The Vegan Gym and co-host of this podcast. And this episode is going to be a little different than any episode that we've done in the past. So I'm about to hit my 10-year vegan anniversary in May of this year, and I decided that I want to share my vegan health and fitness journey in more detail with just complete transparency and lots of data. So my goal with this project, which I'll be documenting via this podcast and videos on the Vegan Gym YouTube channel, will be to prove that you can be super healthy and fit on a plant-based diet. I have recently embarked on a journey to become as fit as possible while maximizing my health and longevity. I'm really focusing on maximizing what I like to refer to as my health span, which is a term that's becoming more popular, which just basically means the healthy years that I have left in my life. Now, these are things that I've always cared about. I've always cared about my health and fitness, but I've realized that I have the opportunity to really level that commitment up to my health and fitness journey while also sharing all my lessons learned with you along the way. So to kick off this journey, I recently got a comprehensive blood test from Quest Diagnostics. And in today's episode, my co-host, Dr. Daphne Bascom, who is a medical doctor and has tons of experience, will be analyzing my results and giving me some recommendations for improving my health metrics moving forward. This was our first time talking about my results. I really wanted you to be able to hear our honest first thoughts and our honest initial interaction about my blood test. So I hope you enjoy that. But it is a little less structured than our normal episodes typically are. So just to make sure you don't have any trouble following along, you can download my full blood test results by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. That way you can more easily follow along with this episode. And if you have any trouble finding that link or downloading it in the description, then you can head to thevegangym.com/data to download it. That's where we're just going to be compiling my health and fitness journey results, I guess probably kind of my data moving forward and just tracking that over time. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope that you enjoy a little bit of a different conversation, and I really hope that you learn something valuable from this. So without further ado, let's jump in. My name is Leif Arneson. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. Hey, what's up? I am your host, Leif Arneson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Daphne Bascom, who is actually going to become my doctor in this episode. We have a unique and special episode set up for you to listen to. And I recently had a full set of labs performed to assess my overall cardiometabolic and endocrine health. And today we're going to share with you the detailed results of those tests and talk through some next steps based on my lab results and health goals. So yeah, I'm excited to dive in, maybe a little nervous. We actually have not spoken about my results up until this point. So this is all going to be, I'm going to be hearing it live with you. So just to set the stage, I'm 32 years old. I weigh 180 pounds or thereabouts right now. And my primary health goal is to improve my health span to the greatest extent possible. And my primary fitness goal, even though that's maybe not too relevant to this episode, is to build muscle. And ultimately, I want to get back up to 190 pounds. And that's kind of my main fitness goal right now. So yeah, what do you think? Are you excited to jump
in? Excited. Leif, welcome to the office today.
This is the most comfortable doctor's office I've ever been to. We're both on a couch.
This may be the longest doctor visit that you've ever had.
Yeah, probably that too.
So, Leif, I think this is a great idea. And thanks for taking the time to allow me to review your results. Can you start just by sharing a little bit about your what you're currently eating at a high level, your physical activity, your sleep, and what your stress level has been like?
Yes. So as far as my nutrition goes, that's always been pretty dialed in. And my most recently, like over the last, I'd say for the majority of the last 6 months, my nutrition has been pretty constant from day to day. Little changes here and there based on travel, but I always start my morning, or pretty much always start my morning, with a large smoothie. And that has spinach, blueberries, mango, pineapple, and a bunch of different, I was going to call them supplements, but I guess not really. It has protein powder, which is a supplement. It has some flaxseed. I've also been adding wheat germ recently, and I have turmeric and then some ginger. So that's what my smoothie has looked like, and I have a heck of a lot of that. It's a half-gallon smoothie that I just kind of sip throughout the morning. And then I've actually been doing mostly kind of one big meal, kind of mid-afternoon, so somewhere between 2 to 4 p.m. And that will be, it has most days over the last 6 months, it's been a bunch of rice and then broccoli or some other veggies, almost always broccoli, and then soy curls. So I keep it pretty simple, and then I'll have some snacks throughout the day. So usually some apples or bananas, and then usually some pretzels, and then also I have walnuts as well. That's something that I've been incorporating, and prior to, that's been a little bit more recent, like over the last 2 months, I've had walnuts pretty much every single day. And prior to that, it would just be some, like a small handful of roasted almonds is kind of what I would typically go for. So that's kind of my, that's kind of the structure of my nutrition. And then I would also maybe throw in an extra protein bar or a protein shake, and then maybe have some kind of mango nice cream that I would make. And that would be a handful of evenings every week.
Okay.
So that's kind of at a high level what nutrition looks like. Physical activity has admittedly been kind of lacking over the last 6 months. That hasn't really been my main priority. I've honestly been working out kind of, I don't know, I'd say probably about 3 times per week on average. And I've been feeling pretty good with that. I'd like to, in terms of maintaining kind of my physique and results and general athleticism, but I would really like to bump that up. As I mentioned, I want to build some lean mass right now. I know that I need to be doing some more physical activity given the kind of amount relative to what I'm training right now. As far as sleep goes, that's been generally going pretty well. And I think I use Whoop to track my sleep, and it's honestly fairly rare for me to dip below 85% on Whoop.
You're killing me.
Like maybe, like really actually that doesn't happen. So I'd...
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's, that goes, that's been going pretty well. And I've actually, there are many weeks where I average 95% plus. So that's been pretty dialed in. And that's honestly something that I have started prioritizing even beyond physical training. So when I wake up in the morning, if I have not had a good night of sleep and I feel a little groggy, I will prioritize sleep over going and training at the gym. And that has been working really well for me. I used to not be affected by lack of sleep, but it has a serious kind of negative impact on me. And I just kind of feel that more and more. And then stress, I think, probably, I don't really know what to compare it to because I really only know
high stress,
kind of maybe higher stress. So yeah, I work a lot, and there's lots of things that come up that create stress. Outside of work, not really too many sources of stress, but yeah, I don't know. I'd say definitely at least moderate levels of stress, and there are many times throughout the week I would classify that as being kind of a higher stress level.
Thank you. And what supplements are you currently taking?
Yeah, so there are a few different shades of supplements that I would say I'm taking. Some of them are what I would call food as supplements. So I already mentioned flaxseed, wheat germ, throw those into my smoothies. The reason that I do that is for their kind of health benefits. Maybe same thing with ginger and turmeric. Really, the reason I'm including that is to just kind of get them into my diet. I also, since over the last 2 months, I've been taking some, I've been calling them spice packets. I actually don't know exactly what Dr. Greger calls them, but since I recorded a video where I went through and ate just like him and started doing his spice packets, which are basically just these little kind of capsules that are made of potato starch. It's like this film that you put spices into and then you seal it off by dipping into some water and then you swallow that. And it's a little weird, and they're actually pretty big. They're surprisingly easy to swallow. And this is coming from a guy who used to not be able to swallow Claritin. So so if that puts it into perspective, okay.
It's not bad.
It's really not that bad. In fact, I vividly remember growing up, I could not swallow any pills, period.
Wow.
Like even Claritin.
Okay.
I just could not do it. It was something, I mean, it was just a mental thing, but I just could not swallow it. And I would always have to take pills and crush them up and put them in applesauce. And that's how I ate pills up until the age of like 20. And yeah, I've been working on it.
Okay.
But
doing well.
Yeah.
Spice packets are going well.
So anyways, point is, this is fairly large, but if I can go from not being able to swallow Claritin to swallowing this, I don't think it's that bad. And then anyways, in the spice packet, I've got a mushroom powder. So mushrooms are one of the foods that Dr. Greger said he would add to his daily dozen. If there was one that he would add, it would be mushrooms. And I detest mushrooms. I have tried again and again. In fact, even the last month, I recorded, I think it was even in the last 30 days that we recorded this video about eating like Dr. Greger for a week. And every single day I tried mushrooms. I tried a different version of mushrooms. I tried some dry. I tried different powders. I tried different kinds of mushrooms from a package. I have given them a thorough chance, and I have not found anything that I like. And Dr. Greger swore to me, hey, porcini mushrooms, they're delicious. You're going to like these, or at least this is your best chance of liking them. And sorry to say, Dr. Greger, it didn't work. So mushroom powder, just put that into this packet so I can swallow it without having to actually eat it. And if you like mushrooms, awesome. All the more power to you. And you can enjoy mushrooms as part of your diet. And Dr. Greger very much approves. But I've got mushroom powder in there. I have black cumin powder as well. He uses turmeric. He puts turmeric powder into his spice packets. I do not do that because I have it in my smoothie. But he also adds piper longamine. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's actually like a few different words, I think, a few different names for it. But piper longamine, I think, is the phrase that he uses. So I have that in there, and then amla powder as well is another one that I've been adding to the spice packet. So it actually takes me 2 spice packets to get all that down. I think it's 1/4 teaspoon of each one, so it's not that much, but the spice packets get pretty big. Actually, the mushroom powder, I think, is 1.5 teaspoons. I think that's what I've been using. So that's another example of maybe some supplements from food, like food supplements. And then as far as supplements go, I have protein powder, and I also use an algae-based omega-3 that has preformed EPA and DHA. And then I also typically use a multivitamin, and the one that I use is the Vitamin Code one for men from Garden of Life. And they had a men's multivitamin that I had been using for a while. It seems like they just discontinued it, so I started getting this new one from them. But yeah, I like Garden of Life's products, and that's what I've been using.
Awesome. And before we start to dive into the details of your lab results, one thing that I think it would be great for you to share, where did you get your labs done? And did you need a prescription to go order these labs?
I actually got them done in our living room. and I did not need a prescription. I just hopped on to Quest Diagnostics and ordered them. And then you have to pay extra for them to come out to your house, obviously. But I paid for that because we wanted to record it. And so we brought them out and I got all my labs done there. And she took quite a bit of blood. It was like 13 vials or something. Kind of.
You were phlebotomized big time.
Yeah.
So thank you for the background. What I'd like to do, Leif, is to walk you through your lab results. What we'll do is just overall, you're very healthy. And so I'll walk you through each of the different categories of labs, dive a little bit deeper into what each lab means, and then provide you some recommendations on small changes you can make maybe to optimize as you're looking for the next phase of your health journey.
All right, awesome. Let's do it.
So let's start with your cholesterol panel. Overall, your lipid profile appears healthy. Your total cholesterol, your low density lipoprotein, your LDL, and your triglycerides are all within desirable ranges. And what this means is that you have a low risk for cardiovascular disease. Just high level for anyone listening, total cholesterol is the sum of all types of cholesterol in the blood. So there are many different types of cholesterol, but the aggregate measure of those is your total cholesterol. And the reason why we measure this is that high levels can indicate a higher risk of heart disease. Your high density lipoprotein, your HDL, which some people refer to, historically have referred to as your good cholesterol, because they help remove other forms of cholesterol from your bloodstream. And traditionally, higher levels of HDL have been associated with lower risk of heart disease. Now, more recently, we've actually had some additional information that may be calling into question some of the cardioprotective effects of HDL. More to come with that, but your HDL level is spot on. There's nothing you would need to do. The only suggestion I would have is that if you continue to increase your omega-3 fatty acids, continue to take your flax seeds, your chia, you're taking your walnuts, those can all help support your HDL levels. So you're doing all the right things there.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to share values. You think that would be good to do?
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, I'm all about transparency.
If you're okay with being transparent,
the health journey.
So your total cholesterol is 105, and the normal range is less than 200 milligrams per deciliter. Your HDL cholesterol, which is in normal range, is 39. Normal is greater than or equal to 40. HDL, again, I'm not asking you to push this number up because I think that I don't know that I have the data to say that higher is better, but you're doing all of the right things from a nutritional supplementation perspective to keep your HDL within a healthy range.
So having omega-3 fatty acids is going to help that all these other kind of dietary sources?
Absolutely. Your flax seeds, your walnuts, your supplements, doing a great job.
Cool. Yeah. And what do you make of the total cholesterol number? Because I think traditionally, if you probably show lots of medical professionals that number, they'd think, wow, that's extremely low.
No, it's not low for...
You think they would think that's good?
Well, you mean low compared to population norms or what people...
There seems to be a misconception about cholesterol and thinking that you can kind of be... too low. Would you say is that even kind of possible? I've always thought that basically, and maybe it's just because of the sources of information I have within the vegan world, but I've kind of been conditioned to think that essentially the lower your total cholesterol number is, the better.
That is correct.
Would you say that's accurate?
That is accurate. Now, I understand the nature of your question in that if most of the people we see in the office have a higher cholesterol, people who eat plant-based tend to have a lower total cholesterol. And I think the circles that I run in with the lifestyle medicine providers, this is more in the range that we're accustomed to seeing. So to me, it's not anything out of the ordinary, but you are a healthy young individual and this number is awesome.
So regarding HDL cholesterol, we're kind of out of my small area of expertise in talking about cholesterol. For HDL cholesterol, I'm a little surprised to know that all of these other dietary fat sources that don't contain any cholesterol can help you to raise your HDL cholesterol.
They do so by helping support your omegas. So increasing your intake of omega-3s in general can be supportive for increasing your HDL levels. So it's not that it is contributing from a cholesterol perspective, but it's the omega-3 perspective.
So would you recommend that I take more than a serving size for omega-3 fatty acid supplements? Or
we're going to get to that later.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Sounds
but
good.
The answer is yes, but not to specifically drive up your HDL. And again, I'm saying that only because I think for the, maybe the past 5 to 10 years, we've been asking people to move your HDL higher and higher. That has been because it's healthy. We think the higher the HDL, the better. But now some more recent literature suggests, are calling this into question. Do you need to have an HDL that's 70, 50, 60, 70? Without that data, I'm not going to say make these changes. I'd rather you keep your HDL within a normal range, and then we continue to augment the other things that you're doing.
Okay, makes sense.
Your triglycerides are 37, normal, which is awesome. Normal is less than 150. Your LDL cholesterol, which is what most people consider to be the bad cholesterol or your lethal cholesterol, is 55. The normal range is less than 70 milligrams per deciliter. So LDL you want as low as possible, and you're actually in a very healthy range. We also have an index of your total cholesterol to HDL ratio, and that is 2.7. So that is measuring, it's a fraction that looks at your total cholesterol. So you can do the math, 105 over 39, that's going to give you a ratio. And your total cholesterol to HDL ratio is not something that you're actually, most people probably won't measure it, but it's a value that Quest will provide on their lab report.
So yeah, that number comes out to 2.7.
Which is exactly what was on your lab report. And the normal being less than 5. Now, when you read your results on Quest, they will actually, you'll notice that some of the metrics that they provide on this report aren't necessarily values that are approved or values that are normative measures that are have population parameters around which we're comparing you as an individual, but they are really reflective of other data on your report. So those are the, I think those are the most important parts of your cholesterol panel that we wanted to talk about in terms of, are you normal? Are you within normal range or are you out of normal range? What I did want to talk about also is the opportunity that you have in terms of future testing, because I think that there are some newer, there's some newer information that I would love to include on your next set of lab results so that we can share those with your audience with regard to what is your lipoprotein A level and then also what is your ApoB level. So lipoprotein A is a type of LDL cholesterol, and it is measured in some lipid panels, but it's not a standard, it's not part of a standard set of a lipid assessment today. But elevated levels of lipoprotein little a are considered a risk factor for cardiovascular disease independent of other cholesterol levels. So while it's not standard or widely available in the United States, in Europe, the European Society of Cardiology actually recommended drawing a level of lipoprotein little a at least once in an individual's lifetime. I would recommend that we consider adding this the next time you get a set of labs.
Okay, great. Let's do it.
The other recommendation I would have would be that we do a one-time test of your ApoB. And both of these measures are assessments that are not necessarily standard part of screening tests today, but they are becoming more common in cardiology circles in terms of getting the information to better assess your risk of cardiovascular disease. ApoB is a protein found in the particles that transport lipids in the blood. And high levels of ApoB indicate a higher number of LDL and other atherogenic particles, which can contribute to cardiovascular risk. An ApoB test, it's called an apolipoprotein B100, can tell you about your risk for cardiovascular disease. And you know, some healthcare providers actually feel that ApoB may be a more accurate measure of your risk than a standard lipid panel.
Okay.
And it is a test that I know is available from Quest Labs.
Okay.
So to recap that, your cholesterol panel is normal. Your HDL is slightly on the low side, but no intervention needed. The remainder of your total cholesterol, HDL, triglycerides, LDL look great. And for our next visit, we'll think about adding lipoprotein little a as a one-time assessment, and the same with ApoB.
Sounds good.
So the next set of labs I want to review with you are your vitamins and minerals. And let me first review the measures that we assessed, indicate to you whether they're normal, and then we can talk more about what to do with based on the data that we're seeing. So you had a calcium assessed, which was 9.8, and that is within normal range. Normal range being 8.6 to 10.3 milligrams per deciliter from Quest Labs. You had a serum iodine. The measure is 89. Iodine is very important for your thyroid health, and that's within normal limits, the range being 52 to 109 milligrams per deciliter. Your total iron. Iron, again, is important for multiple types of enzymes, for hemoglobin. Your value was 110, which was within normal range, the normal range being 50 to 180 milligrams per deciliter. Moving on to your B vitamins, we measured vitamin B1, B12, and B6. Your vitamin B1 level was 135, which is within the normal range, which was 78 to 185 millimoles per liter. Your vitamin B12 level was a little lower than I expected. It was 398, normal range being 200 to 1100 picograms per milliliter, which is why I was asking you about which supplements you take. And then your vitamin B6 level was elevated. It was 100.8, the normal range being 22.1 to 21.7. And I just wanted to ask if you had taken your vitamin Bs or taken any vitamins that morning.
This was, good question. This was all taken on a 16-hour fast, nothing except water. So I guess I stopped eating about, 5 p.m. the evening before, and then the test was taken it would have been longer. So the test was taken 1 or 2 p.m. the following day. So it was, 20 hours or so. And I didn't have any supplements.
Okay. So B vitamins are water-soluble vitamins. I don't think they're nothing that's a huge red flag in terms of anything to do. We'll repeat this next time we get your labs. And you don't need to stop taking your multivitamin. I would want to make sure that you continue to take your multivitamin, continue to take the fortified foods for vitamin B12. So that we can continue to keep that on a mid-range as opposed to lower normal range. And then the last mineral that we measured with this lab panel was your zinc, and that was 98, and that was within normal range being 60 to 130 micrograms per deciliter.
Yeah, very good. So as far as the B6 goes, is there any kind of concern about being over the kind of normal range?
I would not be overly concerned at this. There's nothing to worry about, no.
Okay.
Which is why I was asking about your supplements. If we will repeat it, this is a point in time measure. If it continues to be elevated, we can look at the multivitamins that you're taking. And, we can do that anyways just to see how much B6 is in there. But there's nothing negative that it's doing to you being out of range.
Yeah. And I'd love to highlight that for iodine, I don't use any iodized salts except for the handful of times we do meal preps and we include iodized salt in those videos, which is not that often that I'm even eating that stuff. So that value comes from seaweed. I have that on a regular basis. And at least the last multivitamin I used on a regular basis didn't have iodine in it. And I don't think that the one that I'm using right now does. I should actually look and check that. But even if it does, the vast majority of that number would be due to seaweed consumption.
Which is a great endorsement of the fact that you can, using some of the things that we talked about in a prior podcast, which is just avoiding nutrient deficiencies by eating plant products.
Yeah. Yeah. And frankly, the reason that I use a multivitamin is just kind of as a catch-all. So I can kind of make changes to my nutrition and not really have to worry about hitting certain nutrient targets. So you can totally go through and be able to hit the all of these nutrient targets without using, you can do it with very minimal supplementation. Vitamin B12, I would tend to recommend some kind of preformed omega-3s for EPA and DHA, and then likely some vitamin D depending on your sunshine exposure. But other than that, you can do all of this without supplements. In fact, that's a main reason why we do meal preps that are all nutritionally complete and put down on YouTube, is to just really demonstrate that it's possible to hit all of these targets on a plant-based diet.
Well, while we're talking about that, let's talk about your vitamin D level.
Let's do it.
So your vitamin D level was 35, the normal range being 30 to 100 nanograms per milliliter. So I think that's a little low. And yeah, I would definitely like to encourage you to find opportunities to get out in the sun more. I would like to suggest that you increase either the foods that you're consuming that have vitamin D, or that you take a vitamin D supplement.
Yeah. I don't think I eat any foods that are fortified with vitamin D in my diet. So yeah, supplementation or sun exposure would be the key there. I actually got quite a bit of sun exposure this summer, so I'd be curious to know. I look forward to taking these blood tests again like this coming summer after I've had some more sun exposure, and we'll see how much of an effect that has.
So we can think about maybe 6 months. That'll be August.
Yeah, yeah. I might even do it more regularly than that.
But okay.
I was kind of thinking every 3 months or so. Not that we would need to do a full analysis every 3 months, but just to kind of chart that path.
So the other question I had in terms of, did you say your multivitamin has vitamin D in it?
All right, now I grab my multivitamin bottle so I can answer specific
questions.
It's a big
bottle.
Yeah, it's actually just, for a quick note, it actually does have iodine in it, but it's from organic sea kelp. So it's also from seaweed. And it's got 50% of your required iodine intake for the day. So that wouldn't be able to probably boost me to the number I'm at right now.
Okay. Then we need to think about something else.
Well, I was just talking about iodine.
Oh, okay.
And
got it.
I do include seaweed in my diet in addition to this. So, sorry, what was the one that you wanted me to look at?
I was actually asking about your vitamin D.
So this does have 20 micrograms or 800 IU, and it lists that at 100% of your daily value.
Does it say D2 or D3?
It says, D3.
Okay, perfect. I was going to ask if you were taking D3. Okay, so if you're going to be assessing your labs more frequently, we can watch your vitamin D level. Definitely would consider, again, conservative interventions. It's within normal range. I just flagged it as yellow, so that's something that we can keep an eye on.
Yeah. So would you recommend that I guess just kind of getting more sun exposure plus on top of this 20 micrograms per day is really probably the ticket.
The sun exposure would be great, especially now that you're in a sunnier climate. But if it continues to be lower the next time, we may want to talk about a vitamin D supplement.
Okay, sounds good.
So that brings us to your omegas. So you were able to measure your omega-3, omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, your arachidonic acid level, your EPA and your DHA. So let's talk mainly about the absolute measures of your arachidonic acid, your EPA, your DHA, and your omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. Your omega-3 index, which is the sum of your EPA and DHA, was 3.5, the normal range being 1.4 to 4.9%. Optimal is greater than 3.2. your omega-6, which is your less healthy omegas, your omega-3 ratio was 6.9. The normal range is 5.7 to 21.3. Your arachidonic acid level was 9.1, which was normal. EPA level was 1, which was normal. And your DHA, and all these are measured as percentages, was 2.4, also within normal range. So the takeaway from there is that your omega-3 fatty acids are a little lower than optimal. So you could, there is a little bit of room to increase your, whether it's the omega-3 you're supplementing with, your algal-based supplements that you're taking to get your DHA and EPA, you have a little opportunity to boost them up a little bit.
So would you recommend that I use more of the omega-3 supplement?
I would recommend more omega-3 supplement.
So it's a, there are two little capsules that I take that are, that's the serving size. So what would you bump that up to 3 per day?
Let's try 3 and then see what your next set of labs look like.
All right, let's do it.
So next up are your, we're going to look at your hormone panel. So let me walk through these a little bit because I think that I want to talk about what each one is, and then we can go back and talk about what your results were.
Okay, sounds good.
So your albumin is a protein made by the liver, and it's essential for maintaining fluid balance. It helps keep your fluids within the right body compartments, and it also transports hormones, vitamins, and drugs throughout the body. Your sex hormone binding globulin is a protein that binds to your sex hormones, specifically testosterone, and in the women, estradiol, although you have estradiol too. And it regulates their bioavailability and their activity in the body. Estradiol is a form of estrogen, and it's a hormone that plays a key role in the reproductive system. And it's important in males for your bone health and your libido. Prolactin is a hormone that's primarily associated with lactation, but it also affects sexual satisfaction and reproductive health. And it's important in both men and women. And I think most people, when they're thinking about hormones in men, are thinking about testosterone. And so we have a measure of your total testosterone, which measures the total amount of testosterone free and bound in the blood. Testosterone free is the fraction of testosterone that's not bound to proteins in the blood, and that represents the biologically active form of testosterone. And then you also have a measure from your lab results, which includes the bioavailable testosterone. And that includes the free and the testosterone that's loosely bound to albumin. So both of them are available for use in your body. So going back to your lab results, your albumin was 5, which was absolutely at the high end of normal range, which is great. Your sex hormone binding globulin was 23, which is right in the middle of the range of normal, the normal range being 10 to 50 nanomoles per liter. Your total testosterone was 336. The normal range is 250 to 1100 nanograms per deciliter. And we'll talk a little bit more about your total testosterone. Your estradiol is 17, normal being less than 39 picograms per milliliter in males. Your prolactin level is 16.2, which is normal. Your free testosterone was 54.7, also within the normal range, normal being 46 to 224 picograms per milliliter. And your bioavailable testosterone was 124.4, normal range being 110 to 575 nanograms per deciliter. So part of the reason I was asking you the questions with regard to what you're eating, how you're sleeping, what your physical activity is, relates to some of the recommendations I have for you for optimizing your hormone health. So the first thing, and we've already talked about it, is that we want to make sure that you're focusing on nutrient-dense foods that are rich in zinc. These include legumes, nuts, and seeds. We've talked about optimizing your vitamin D, both by fortified foods, by supplements, and by getting out in the sun. And then want to also optimize your magnesium by making sure you're getting your leafy greens and your whole grains. And these are dietary adjustments that can help optimize your hormone health. With regard to your physical activity, the fact that you have not been doing as much resistance training, strength training, I think as you start to ease into this next phase of your physical training plan, this may actually help boost your testosterone levels. So your testosterone levels are normal, but I think you have opportunity to move them up into a higher range. Now, we know that physical activity, you know, resistance training, high intensity interval training can boost your testosterone production and also the release of testosterone from the testes. So being physically active, actually doing the higher intensity training, I would expect to see a slight shift in that the next time we take a blood test for you.
Yeah, that value did strike me as being a little on the low side.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I would like to, I guess, see higher, but I don't know how much of that is just like guys saying like, oh yeah, my testosterone's 750. I'm a man. So I don't really know how to unpack that, but
I think I want to touch on two other things that can impact your testosterone levels. And one of them you're optimizing. The other, I think that there is opportunity to focus on. So stress can actually have a negative impact on your testosterone level. And we have the same conversation in the Menopause Mastery course, because stress can, high cortisol can suppress the body's ability to produce the testosterone by affecting your hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. So the signals coming from your brain, your hypothalamus, your pituitary down to your testes and saying produce more testosterone, that can be negatively impacted when you're chronically under stress. Additionally, cortisol competes with testosterone for the same sites on muscle cells, and so it can reduce testosterone's effects. So high cortisol can compete with some of the binding on your muscle cells. So even when you have an optimal testosterone environment, that may, you know, that high, you know, high stress state can actually have a negative impact. So better managing your stress can, one, be positive for your cardiovascular health, and also be positive for your hormone health.
Yeah, that's good to know. And yeah, I knew about resistance training being beneficial with increasing testosterone. Do you have any idea as to maybe roughly what kind of magnitude increase you would attribute kind of directly to more physical activity? I imagine that would be very
negligible.
Difficult data to determine through scientific kind of studies.
Leif, I do not know the answer to that. And I don't know if there are studies that have looked at that specifically. So doing measured increments of resistance training and looking at the impact, knowing a baseline testosterone and seeing the effect, I'd have to do some research. I don't know.
Well, I'd have to do some research too. So that, that can be something we dive into.
But the other thing that can have a positive impact on your testosterone is sleep. During sleep, especially in the REM phase, is when the body increases its production of testosterone. So I know you've been focusing on optimizing your REM sleep. That may also have a positive impact on your testosterone levels. Lack of sleep or poor quality sleep can lower your testosterone levels, which can impact your muscle growth, your libido, and your overall energy. So you need to, again, double down on your sleep, double down on making sure you're getting your REM sleep, because that can also help optimize your testosterone levels.
Yeah, awesome. That is something that I've been working hard to continue optimizing. And I've seen, as far as my sleep metrics go, probably seen the most variability in my REM sleep numbers. So
going up or?
Kind of just fluctuating. Okay. So some nights, like last night, I got 4.5 hours of deep sleep and REM sleep. And then other nights I'll get like 2 hours and 15 minutes. And then I think I've topped out at just over 5 hours before. And I've seen sub 2 hours before. So like that has all happened even in the like 7 to 8 hour range of sleep. So clearly there's a lot more that I can do and I don't really know how much variability in that is normal, but clearly there's a lot more that I can do to work to consistently get, let's say, 3.5 hours plus of deep plus REM sleep. And Yeah, I think I've mentioned this before, but I actually find that how I feel in terms of just general energy levels and how I feel when I get up is most heavily impacted by that amount of sleep and not my total amount, total hours of sleep.
Your REM sleep.
So that's really something that I want to work on optimizing.
But going back to your other question, is it just that you want more testosterone because you want to feel manly?
Yeah, I don't think that's, I don't know, maybe that is kind of something at the back of lots of guys' minds, but
it probably is, but there are health benefits of having, you want to optimize your testosterone at this phase in your life. You want to optimize your muscle growth. You want to optimize your bone health. You want to optimize your libido. It's not because you're chasing a figment of the Hulk, yeah. Right? Because the Hulk, we don't know what the Hulk's testosterone levels were, yeah. But there are positive health benefits of having your hormones in a healthy range.
Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely something I'll be interested to kind of see changes in moving forward. So this is actually the first time I've ever gotten a hormone panel. So
that's interesting.
I've actually never seen this number before.
Okay.
So this is new territory for me, which is good. So now I can start tracking this more consistently and understand what kind of lifestyle changes I can be making to work to further improve these numbers.
And the last metabolic measure that I want to talk about before we wrap up your exam today is your hemoglobin A1C. And that was 5.1, the normal range being less than 5.7. So hemoglobin A1C is a indicator of how healthy your blood glucose has been over the past 90 days. So rather than having a one-time measure of what your fasting blood glucose is, it's like looking at an average or an area under the curve, which tells me that you have been metabolically healthy in terms of your glucose homeostasis for the past 90 days, which I would expect. But again, it's always nice to be reassured that you aren't on an upper end of a hemoglobin A1C being slightly elevated.
Well, that's good to know, because I've gotten so many comments on YouTube about people who are concerned
about your
me getting diabetes for all the fruit I eat.
So. No, you're doing okay.
Yeah. So yeah, public service announcement. You want to share about break the misconception of diabetes and fruit intake?
I think, if nothing else, the Mastering by Diabetes group also does that. Eating fruit does not cause diabetes.
Carbs in general.
No, like, carbs, no. Being obese, overweight, will predispose you to developing type 2 diabetes. Generally, being metabolically unhealthy will increase your risk. Eating carbohydrates, eating fruits, there is no direct correlation between eating those foods and developing type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, good to know. So that's pretty comprehensive.
So yes, overall cholesterol looks good. Vitamins and minerals look good. Omegas look good. Vitamin D, we have some work to do. Sex hormones, we're going to continue to monitor over the months ahead. Hemoglobin A1C within normal range.
Okay, awesome. Well, Dr. Bascom, thank you for your time. Thanks for inviting me to your
office.
Yeah, and to your office and running me through all of these numbers.
You're very welcome. And I look forward to doing this again. I hope those of you listening have found this episode as fascinating as I have. Deep diving into Leif's labs has given us all an opportunity to see what his baseline is from someone who follows a very healthy nutrition regimen, from someone who is optimizing his sleep, his physical activity, his mental health, looking at his stress. I think the most important thing I want you to take away from today's conversation is know your numbers. It's important to have an understanding of your cardiovascular health, your metabolic health, and your endocrine health. It will help you give you the information you need to optimize your health. And I hope that we'll be doing additional episodes like this as you continue your own health journey.
Yeah, I'm counting on it. That would be really awesome. I really want to share more of my personal health and fitness journey and bring people through that process and explain, here's what's going well, here's maybe what's not going so well, here's what I'm doing to constantly improve, here's how I'm changing my nutrition, here's what I'm learning through that process. And I just kind of want to be a guinea pig for how to kind of optimize your health and fitness on a plant-based diet and following resistance training and staying and as healthy and fit as possible.
So maybe in a future episode, we can look at our Whoop data.
We can do that as well. Yeah. So I'll continue working to boost those numbers too. I'll work to dial things in with my REM sleep. Yeah, that's another. So as Daphne touched on, I recently moved and I'm actually kind of in my own place for kind of the first time ever. And I'm living with my girlfriend, but I recently moved out from living with Anders, and we lived together for 7 years.
Wow.
Like we had ever since he got back from the Marines. Uh-huh. And I was kind of a few years out of college at that point, but I was living in a small apartment in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he moved in. I was actually living with a friend as well, so it was the three of us for a while, and then our friend got married and he moved out, and then it's been me and Anders for 7 years, and we just finally he's got his own place, and now I have my own place, and that's been, anyways, it's kind of giving me the opportunity to have a little bit more personal space and be able to optimize my personal health and fitness routines, especially kind of my sleep routine, and really dialing that in, because my bedroom had been right next to the kitchen. So really when anybody was in the kitchen, I'm kind of up at that point. So being able to dial things in and kind of be on my own routines is just, I think that's going to be really helpful. So yeah, I look forward to taking all of you on that journey. That's what this is going to be all about.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Daphne. I appreciate it. And I look forward to having another conversation like this soon.
Thanks, Leif.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you would like to follow my vegan health and fitness journey, I would highly suggest that you subscribe to The Vegan Gym on YouTube. We're going to be releasing regular videos that document my journey to optimizing my health and fitness. And I just want to share all of those lessons learned with you, share the wins, share the struggles, share the failures, and just do that all really transparently. So please be sure to subscribe by searching for The Vegan Gym on YouTube, and then you can stay tuned for future content. Thank you so much for your support. I really look forward to bringing you a ton more value. And my goal is to help you achieve your best health and shape on a plant-based diet. That's what Daphne and I are trying to do with this podcast. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll catch you on the next one. To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to thevegangym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at thevegangym.com.